Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, joined once again by Nathan Heinschel and Polly Questel. How's it going, boys?
Oh, the Busby Babes are back. Or the Busby Bays are back. It's been a while.
It has.
It's helping the muted vibes so far over since
the vibes
our
life. Are bad. Let's call it as it is. Vibes are bad, and it's weird because United are winning, and the vibes are bad.
At best, the vibes are weird.
Yeah, very weird vibes.
Just a heads up to listeners on this podcast. It is going to be a little bit more vibes focused, maybe philosophy focused if we're feeling bougie, than tactical or game focused. Just the three of us kind of noticing the toxicity that's been resonating with Manchester United fans on the bird, you know, more so than usual. After the West Ham win and what I feel like stems from the differences over feelings about Cristiano Ronaldo's return to some degree. But just it seems like a lot of people are not happy that everyone else isn't as excited about Manchester United winning than we are when we're, you know, trying to helpfully point out that the way that Manchester United has been winning might not actually be sustainable.
Yeah, without recycling the last podcast that we did either, where I think we all went into depth about how we're actually feeling about the Cristiano Ronaldo signing. Just looking at the way it really does feel like there is quite a bit of infighting in the fan base, more so than usual. Like, last year, United would maybe have a bad run of form, and you would see Polly responding to people who were saying Ollie out, and that was about the extent of the discourse. The Super League really kind of got everybody in lockstep together, where they were all like, no, this is bad, we don't like this, and it seemed pretty universal. I think the only people supporting it were probably bots that were created by the Glazer family to make that possible. But this year is very odd, and I think we anticipated this, and we've mentioned this in previous podcasts too, the intent that was made, or even if it hasn't been explicitly said verbally, the intent is there, that it was like, when you sign a player like Cristiano Ronaldo, one, because he's older, and two, because of his history as a player, this is a win now team. And we immediately went from Ollie's got free reign to rebuild however he sees fit to bring us back to where he envisions United needs to be. Now, all of a sudden, this is what he's got, and he has to win with it because he signed a guy like Ronaldo. Whether or not you subscribe to the idea that because Ronaldo was available, United had to go after him. There was no way that they couldn't not, go for him. I think there's an argument to say that it would obviously have been much smarter probably not to put all of our eggs in that basket. But, this is Ollie now. This is what he has to deal with. So when you have those extenuating circumstances, then you go on social media and you see how people are dealing with it or handling it or experiencing it. And it's all very wayward. You see, like, Ronaldo scores a tap-in. People make a joke about how he's not a tap-in merchant. And then it's like people are posting pictures of him tapping in a ball. That was one particular example I saw that just made me laugh. But what I think you are seeing is now all of a sudden when the team wins, they're infallible. And when the team loses, it's like DEFCON 1. At that point, we've already gotten into a culture of overreacting every time United has a bad performance. But now we're starting to see this weird bubble where United might have a weird performance, but they win. And so because they win, they're above any kind of criticism in that regard. And we're seeing certain friends of the pod that we don't have to keep name dropping. We're just friends with them now, and you guys know it. We're attacked because hey, look, we won 2-1 in West Ham, but like that was not a convincing game of football. These are some things that probably need to change, and they need to change quick before somebody does take advantage of these flaws. And all of a sudden, it's just everyone's in their replies. It's attack dogs.
It doesn't take much to take advantage of the flaws too, because it's we should clarify that other than Wolves, we haven't really been at risk of losing games so much as like we've just been failing to win or almost failing to win games that you need to win in order to win the title.
Right. And so there's just the mobilization is a lot more people. I think just people are quicker to mobilize this year because I think they have a certain expectation. And for whatever nostalgic feelings or hero complexes that they have thrust upon certain players, they then take it personally when you might have criticism of something that isn't even related to them. I see it as one of the managers of the Busby Babe social media team here. Hey, I was the one that was tweeting the game. No, I'm not celebratorily tweeting out a certain person's name. I'm just tweeting out their number. And people are starting to take notice that I'm doing that deliberately and not as like a bit. So I just think everyone's quick to like flip out, and it's like, guys, again, it is September. Let's not get so high. Let's not get so low. If you really feel the need that you got to like tweet at somebody who may or may not even ever see your tweet because of verified Twitter accounts see different things differently, you know, maybe just go for a walk and like breathe in some fresh oxygen. Maybe go get a custard, you know, enjoy the sweet deliciousness of a custard. Just like chill out.
You like dropping in that verified people see things differently, because now that you have access to a verified account.
I have access to two verified accounts, but that's beside the point.
Nathan said a lot there. It started last week. And I guess it even started after the Newcastle match, but I didn't see things after the Newcastle. I just saw people attacking analysts or analytic people because Ronaldo got off to a
numbers people.
Yeah, because Ronaldo got off, because there were people that were skeptical about the transfer, and then United won their first game against Czech Notes Newcastle United, whom they've lost to like once in the last 5 years. And Ronaldo scored two goals, and it's like, yeah. And like I said on the pod with you and Aaron, actually, I think I said it after the pod with you and Aaron, I was like, Ronaldo's going to have four goals in his first two games because these things always start well. Romelu Lukaku started really well. Alvaro Morata at Chelsea started really well. Alexander Lacazette at Arsenal started really well. I remember the beginning of that season when all three of those guys were just scoring and everybody was like, which one's the best? And by January, two of them were out of the team and Lukaku wasn't scoring anymore. Zlatan Ibrahimovic started off really well. These things always start well. What happens as the season progresses, the weather gets bad, you get tired, and it's wage. Like I said, Will Ronaldo, we saw 5 minutes into that Newcastle match, Ronaldo went and chased down a player and pressed a player, and everybody was going nuts because that's what they said he doesn't do. Well, it was the only time he did it all match. And it's like, will he do – it's like, yes, he did that on his first day in September. Will he do that on a Saturday evening in November or December when the games are coming thick and fast? And perhaps he will. It's not unfair to – question that, though, especially when he backed up that pressure that he did in the first 5 minutes of the game by not doing it again all game. So people were going after those. And then Tuesday happens with the Young Boys match. And Nathan touched on it last year. If United would go on a bad run of form and I'd go out there. Everybody knows my feelings on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I am a fan of him. I support him. I do think he can do better. And Tuesday, the amount of people that were just immediate to say, oh, well, it was a red card, and oh, and Jesse Lingard made a bad mistake, and this and that, and Solskjaer, like, just blind defending of him to the point that they were attacking people for even criticizing him, when Ollie deserved a lot of criticism in that match. Because I do think, like, ultimately, I know Colin said that we weren't going to get tactical, but I'm here, so we will. Ultimately, like, after the red card, what Solskjaer wanted to do made sense. It was, you know, he brought on Diogo Dalot as a like-for-like change right away. He had no presence in midfield, and it was like, well, if we're going to do this, we need presence in midfield. I don't want to sit back and defend the entire time. So he went to a back three, with the idea being that you have Fred sitting in front of your back three, then you have Pogba and Bruno and Ronaldo, and you'll have your wing-backs to provide you with width, and this way Pogba and Bruno can still get forward. And that only works if you can maintain possession and be able to push the ball up and get some hold-up play. But Ronaldo's not a hold-up play striker, and nor is he someone that's going to run around and give you a lot of defensive effort. So Bruno and Pogba kept dropping deeper, and the gap between Pogba and Ronaldo in the midfield grew, which made it worse. And then United can't get possession, which means your wing-backs are pushed into a back five. And to begin with, a Fred, Bruno, and Pogba midfield is not going to keep possession. So, like, the tactics were sound. The players that he put on the pitch to, like, execute him made no sense whatsoever. Paul Pogba should have been withdrawn when Juan Bissaka got the red card. He had been doing nothing all game. And then it made sense to bring off Ronaldo and bring on Lingard to provide you with that industry. Because at that point, it was, yeah, it's 1-1, and you want to hold on to a draw. And they would have if Lingard didn't make a colossal mistake. And that has nothing to do with the manager. But the manager definitely deserved criticism, especially because for the first 35 minutes of that game, when it was 11-11, United were awful. They were really bad. And I mentioned this, and I got shade thrown at me on the bird from people being like, oh, well, Von, because, you know, I said, like, they got nothing from the midfield. None of their midfielders wanted to be on the ball, and they couldn't get the ball forward to their attacking players. Pogba and Sancho could not get on the ball to save their life. And I wrote about this that will go up as soon as Colin reads it. And I gave you a massive 3,000 word tactical analysis, because part of the
reason why Thompson.
Yeah. Well, because Nathan's right. The performances have been crap. Part of Colin used the word that I didn't want to use, which was unsustainable, to say that United's performances right now are unsustainable. And they are. That doesn't mean that they aren't going to get better, because we're five games into the season. And what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is doing is adapting his team to Ronaldo and to Paul Pogba and to Bruno Fernandes. And he is putting a new system in place. This, against Young Boys and against West Ham, that system, United played much more of a 4-3-3 than a 4-4-2-3-1. And it was more of like a 4-3-2-1 kind of thing, with some pieces that didn't make sense, but are there for various reasons. But it's a complete change in their build-up play and their shape than what it was last year. So there's a lot for players to get used to, so I understand why performances aren't that great. My concern was, you put Donny van de Beek in midfield, and it looked exactly like all the other times that Donny van de Beek was in midfield, which was United had all of the ball. They had 65% possession, and it's just among their back four. It's Maguire, it's Lindelof, it's Shaw, it's Juan Bissaka. There was no passing through the midfield.
The goal came from the hoof it to the big man strategy, which was, you know, Bruno, you know, just launching it to Ronaldo, and the keeper and defender both happening to make a mistake.
Correct. Like, and your other shot came from a counterattack. Young Boys, every so often, will get short. People said, oh, United were controlling the match, and it's like, they weren't. Young Boys were just in short bursts coming and generating chances, whereas United had all the ball but weren't doing anything with it, and they couldn't get, like, they weren't passing through the midfield. It was going out wide, and then Juan Bissaka would pass it vertically up the line, and when he does that, Jadon Sancho has to drop deeper to get the ball with his back to goal with a man on him. All he could do is give it back to Juan Bissaka. It was bad. And the overwhelming feeling, especially after the West Ham match, is that United should be playing better than this. And some of it is you're putting in a new system, and some of it is simply, like, the midfielders are not good. And Donny van de Beek is not a good midfielder. The jury is still out for him as an attacking midfielder. In central midfield, he is not good. This game looked like the Everton friendly, the Leicester match at the end of the year, the Watford match, all the Istanbul match away in Istanbul, all the matches where he plays in midfield, and United have all the possession, but don't turn it into shots and scoring chances because they're not going. They're just doing this thing of passing it around amongst the back four, wide and forward, the way I play FIFA, and there's a reason I'm not good at FIFA. You need midfielders who are going to be on the ball, and that's not Fred, and it's not Van de Beek, and that was an issue. But then we went to Sunday, where for the first 25 minutes, it was the same thing. United had all the ball, but they were being outshot. Their only shot came up. They had two shots. One was a corner, and one was on a counterattack. So when you have all the ball, it's not good that the only way that you're able to generate any chances is letting the other team get down and take shots at your goal. Like, that's not good. And then they turned it on the end of the first half, and they had some good bits there where things started to come together. And then the second half, they looked very tired. But overall, it was a boring game. It was a bad game. And I don't think there's any problem with saying that. I happened to have, we were going on a friend's boat, so we were down at the Jersey Shore. There was a bar like 20 minutes away from where he docks his boat. And I said, I'm going to watch the game there. And with about 7 to 10 minutes to go, I was like, all right, let's go. Like, I'll watch the rest of the game in the car because we're not winning this game. And my wife was like, we can be late. Like, we're 20 minutes away. And like, you know, everybody else is 20 minutes away. So like, we could just be a few minutes late. And I was like, we can, but there's just no point. Like, if the United were knocking on the door and pounding that goal, of course I would have stayed. But I was like, yeah, we're not going to win this game. I'll watch the rest of it on my phone in the car. And my wife almost crashed the car because I was screaming so loud when Jesse Lingard scored. And again, when David De Gea made that save, like, it was really exciting. And it turned into a thrilling win. That doesn't mean that the game was good. You can have a bad game with a good outcome and in a thrilling manner. But the first 85 minutes of that game were just drab and crap. And the overwhelming feeling is United should be better than this. And that's like people. I really feel like it's, yes, Colin is right. It's the Ronaldo, that there are people that are mad, seemingly, that some other fans aren't worshiping the air Ronaldo breathes the way they are. And whatever your feelings are about Ronaldo, people have different opinions on him. And it also seems to be that it's some of the Solskjaer people also, because it's like to say that, oh, they're not playing well, it's like coming after the manager and attacking him for it. And it's like, no, but they aren't playing well. And he's putting in a new style. And we saw what happened at the beginning of the season, two seasons ago and last season. It takes a bit of time for everybody to get used to it. The difference is this year you have Ronaldo. So while you're papering over these, while you're getting used to everything, you're still going to be able to grind out results. And that's a good thing. That doesn't mean that the performances have been there, but I think they will get there. And that's fine. It's five games. It's been five games. Like, there's time to work this out and figure it out.
I think, just to tie this in a little bit, because Nathan gave the shout out as the joke early, but the Wright Thompson wrote a long piece for ESPN about Manchester United and the kind of reunion with Ronaldo and the feeling of fans around all of that. And there's a good podcast of it with Pablo Torre on the ESPN Daily podcast. If you don't have ESPN Plus, they basically just summarize the article in there in that podcast episode. But like, tying it into the way that we've been playing and, you know, just these feelings around Ronaldo, it really does feel like the time has come for the expectations of Solskjaer to be delivered on the pitch. And for everyone who has been supportive of the Solskjaer project, you know, as we have, and been really eager to see, you know, all that hard work come to fruition, you know, the arrival of Ronaldo really complicated that for a lot of us. And, you know, both for football and non-football reasons, it's just been a weird adjustment seeing it start to play out, I think. And I know that there's a ton of excitement around just his presence and him being this mega entity, as well as just being, you know, a really good goal scorer. But I mean, can we just calm down? Like, it's like you said, Polly, like, we're 5 games into the season and it already feels like everyone is.
It feels like people are mad that you're not, that like, not everybody is agreeing that United are title favorites. Like, everybody agrees United are outside title contenders, that they can contend for this title and they have an outside chance. But people are like, oh, but they're not even title. To not call them title favorites seemed to be getting this negative reaction. When last I checked, like, what are the games that we had? Leeds at home, Southampton away, Wolves away, Newcastle at home, and now West Ham away. And we've won 4 of them, and we drew 1. And remember, what did we do last year? We finished on, like, 74 points, right? 74, 76, something like that?
Yeah.
So what do we need to do? We need to add points to our haul this year in order to win the title. We need to get to at least, at the very least, 85, and it's going to take more than that to win. But let's just say we need to add 11 points. Well, Leeds at home last season, we won that game. Southampton away, we won. Wolves away, we won. Newcastle at home, we won. West Ham away, we won. So not only have we, so we are actually worse off than we were last year. We're off to a better start, but in terms of these fixtures where you're like, okay, Ronaldo will take some of those draws that we had last year or losses and add wins to them, we are already behind the eight ball in that regard.
Yeah. Sorry, Nathan, we cut you off. What were you going to say?
Well, no, I think a lot of this too is just indicative of a more widespread thing that you might notice when you are on social media, is like stan culture in general now has really reached like new levels of toxicity. And we're just seeing it in the microcosm of football. But I mean, you can see it. If you just click on the trending topic, when there's just like a name on there, you know, for instance, I don't know, pick a random person who's been really big in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And you have like all these accounts that will just sit there and, you know, heap effusive praise on this person, like they are infallible. And so we're seeing it in the context of football. And like, you know, Manchester United makes a post and there's all these fucking Twitter avatars of like Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard and all that. And they're all like, Manchester United's a small club, all this kind of stuff. Or you should have signed this player because, you know, they're the best player of all time. And so there's this like minority of accounts that make the conversation already so extreme with those viewpoints that that's where you're then starting if you're a like-minded individual, or even if you are counter to that idea, then all of a sudden you got to take it all the way back from this extreme if you ever feel like, you know, responding to a random Twitter account whose avatar is a footballer, which I think the first rule of that is don't do that. I mean, that's like a joke in our Slack channel. You know, Brent would always be like, uh-oh, somebody with a footballer as a Twitter avatar is replying to me right now. I'm too old to be doing this. So, you know, stan culture in general is dumb, to be honest with you. I think people are just putting way too much stock in people who don't know who they are. So just like chill out, man. Focus on yourself.
I think I might title the episode just chill out, man.
I mean, I think that's a good title. Honestly, it's just we're just operating at such extremes. And a lot of it is just related to, you know, social media. It's funny. A lot of my job in general is tied to social media. I'd love for social media to go away. And maybe that's just me being an old man now, but I just feel like the harm is so much worse than what the good is. And the toxicity and just, I don't know, it's just dumb. It's really dumb. I wish I could say it more smartly than that, you know, with more intelligence, more adjectives. It's just dumb. Like, everyone just chill out. Like,
yeah, I think
I had like a heartbreaking moment this morning when I was like, it's so bad that I reached out and DM'd somebody to just see like, hey, how are you? And the answer that he gave, like, I'm not going to quote it because it's very distinct and you'll know who it is. But the answer that he gave was just heartbreaking, to be like, this is a professional, and the amount of virtual he's getting right now is just ridiculous, because
for making sound points.
Whether his points are sound or not, it's like he doesn't see things the way that you see things about a football team. And it's like, that's the level that you're going to, like, and the arguments have just gotten so ridiculous. Like, that's really been the crux of the people have been grasping for at straws, really, for these arguments. And it's like, why don't you just chill out and say, like, hey, it's been five games, and it's totally fair. And this is, I tweeted about it and I wrote it in the piece today. It's like, and I wrote about it last week too, was there are noticeable things happening, and it's totally fair to point it out, but also it's been four or five games. So it's just, it's not, hey, this is what's, like, it's not a definitive statement of this is happening and it's bad and it's going to sink United. It's, this is happening. We got to keep an eye on this. Let's see. Because, you know, one of the things I'm wondering about is, will Paul Pogba work on the left wing with Ronaldo now? Like, remember this. United, whatever plan they had, Jadon Sancho came in, and yeah, he played, but, like, Paul Pogba wasn't there for all preseason. Bruno Fernandes was there for, like, a week. A lot of these guys didn't get a chance to really mesh until the first few games of the season. And then McTominay got hurt. Sancho had been sick, etc. Whatever plan United had got thrown out the window the second that they brought Ronaldo in, because he's a different player to everyone else, including Cavani. And he plays, maybe he plays the same position as Cavani, but he plays it differently. So, and you have to change everything.
He plays it a way that makes it about him.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And that's been part of the frustrating thing to watch United, is that for the last two games, it just seemed like their entire attack, which was really starting to click in this way of, we've got a lot of really good attackers and we could hit you from anywhere. Anyone can pop in and score these goals. Now became, we've got a bunch of attackers and all they're going to do is try to pass to Ronaldo.
I'm glad you brought this up, because we spent the better part of 2 years, ever since the Busby Bays came together on this podcast, we've been beating our fists against our desk going, like, man, I cannot wait until this team signs the prince that was promised, when we finally get Jadon Sancho, you know? We have not fucking talked about Jadon Sancho.
I think, to be fair, I thought he looked pretty good against West Ham. Like, when he came in, I think it was a good substitution by Ollie to bring on him and Lingard. And, like, it was the right move at that time in the game to bring on people who could be interchangeable across the front line. Because with Pogba on the wing, he was basically just drifting central to try and accommodate for all of our midfield struggles.
Like,
and
people even going to be excited when Sancho finally scores, like, you know?
Right.
Like, so the whole thing about this formation now is, it's not really, like, Pogba's not really playing as a left winger. He is playing as a left central midfielder. And there's a lot of times where you see him and Fred and McTominay, especially when defending, they are in a standard, like, three-man midfield. Fred's a little bit deeper, and then Pogba and McTominay are in a line, and Pogba is not defending out on the wings. And if you go back and watch the Leeds and Southampton matches, like, when they get possession and they bring it deep, Pogba goes and tracks the wingers and does what a winger would do defensively. Against Young Boys and West Ham, he's not doing that at all. Like, he's defending the way a midfielder would defend. So, yeah, like, Pogba was moving around the pitch, but I think also part of that is because when he played out on the wing, he would tuck inside and, like, occupy that half space. And Ronaldo, Cavani likes to stay on the defender's shoulder. Ronaldo likes to drift over to the left and occupy that half space. And against Newcastle, that sort of relegated Jadon Sancho to being this touchline winger, which is not Jadon Sancho's game at all. He's a guy that wants to be in the half spaces and making quick movements. And despite that, he was still really good. So my question is, how will Pogba deal with this? You might have to play Pogba deeper. in order to accommodate this, because Pogba has not looked good over the last two games. And he looked very good against Newcastle playing in a deeper role. But again, that's Newcastle. And we know that she doesn't really want to play deep. Ollie doesn't really want to play him there. Something's got to give. It's something to watch out for. As Nathan said, we haven't talked about Jadon Sancho yet. Like, there's this narrative that Jadon Sancho is not playing well and that he's struggling. Jadon Sancho leads the team in shots created. And he's played half the games. And he's creating more shots per 90 minutes than anybody else, to the point that he played 20 minutes on Sunday, didn't create a single shot. Bruno Fernandes and Luke Shaw both created 7 each. And Jadon Sancho still is creating more shots than them. Like, when he came on against Southampton, and the 65 minutes against Newcastle, even as a touchline winger, he was that good. It's just that the fine margins of him getting an assist versus, or him scoring a goal, haven't gone his way yet. And eventually they will. What was in, like, and this is part of what Ollie's going to have to manage now the rest of the season, is in this new formation, basically, is that Mason Greenwood is kind of shunted out to, like, this half right wing, half dual number 10 with Bruno Fernandes. And that's not Mason Greenwood's game at all. And he doesn't fit that position at all. But Mason Greenwood came into this game with 3 goals and 4 Premier League appearances. Like, you, how do you drop him? You can't really drop him. But now if you want to play him, where are you going to play him? It's either up top where Ronaldo is, or you got to play him in this role that doesn't fit his position at all. And that role is only being created because you're trying to accommodate for the things that Ronaldo doesn't do. You have to make sure that you're doing them, and as well as the fact that, which means playing that extra defensive midfielder, because you've got a forward that doesn't do any of the defensive work the way Cavani or Rashford or even Martial does. And it doesn't fit Mason Greenwood, but that role fits Jadon Sancho like a glove. That's exactly the role Jadon Sancho was supposed to be playing, which is why, yeah, he came on against West Ham and looked good. I just can't wait until he actually gets on the pitch and plays in that role, because it was just mind-boggling to me watching Mason Greenwood, who looked okay but not good at all, and not really his fault, because this isn't your position, to be like, hey, you know, United need a goal. I'm like, maybe they should just bring on the guy who would be perfect for this.
So a couple observations on all this, because it is interesting. I mean, Sancho spent the last year and a half of his life with arguably the currently most dominant striker in the world, if not very shortly will be. And that tandem was quite successful. If you look at the numbers, I mean, they look like they've been juiced. But it's funny that despite bringing in who is arguably either the greatest, second greatest, third greatest, I don't really care what the absolute is, but one of the greatest attacking players to ever play this sport has managed to make Manchester United inflexible in the way that they're positioning players, necessarily the way that the team liked to attack last year versus this year is just, you know, a lot different. So I guess my question for you guys, I'll play Colin's role for a second. Do you feel like, in a way, then this is on Solskjaer for not having control? Like, do you feel like Solskjaer is bending a little bit too much to the Ronaldo allure as well?
I think that part of that is, I think, Cavani being out and Martial not being, you know, a reliable option up top. So it's been a good time for someone like Ronaldo to come in and just be immediately a contributor in the team. But also, I mean, like we talked about in the past, this is something that Solskjaer has bought into and needs to take responsibility for, and figuring out how to make all this work is something that can happen. And I think it's something that he's capable of managing, but, you know, he's got to figure it out.
Yeah, this was easily my biggest fear coming in. And I mentioned this to you guys, was when things aren't going well, Ronaldo becomes that, I'm just going to do it all myself. He goes into that mode And he like goes away from the rest of the team and goes, just give me the ball and I'm going to do it myself.
Oh, like Bruno?
And it doesn't work. And Bruno does the exact same thing. And Solskjaer has already not been strong enough to handle Bruno when he does that. He doesn't pull him off the field or anything. He doesn't yell at him and be like, hey, play within the game. And part of that is being a player's coach. He is a player's coach. And he, look, United really struggled against Newcastle because Newcastle in the first half, because Newcastle were overloading United's left side and leaving the right side wide open because Daniel James and Aaron Wan-Bissaka are on the right side. And it's not very creative over there. Solskjaer could have switched this easily by just swapping Daniel James and Jadon Sancho. But Jadon Sancho prefers to play on the left. So he let him. He's like, it's your first game. It's your Old Trafford start. I'll let you run down the left. Like, that's the kind of manager he is. And maybe at a certain point, he has to be stronger than that. Now, the Ronaldo thing, like, it was never going to be. You're never not start him. You just signed Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, even if Cavani was healthy, he would have started. He scored 2 goals against Newcastle. He was obviously going to start against Young Boys. He's scored in every game so far. It's not like Solskjaer's even had an excuse to drop him, whether anybody else was fit or not. And again, like I just said, that's the conundrum that you get with Mason Greenwood. Is I think eventually he's going to find this system where everybody's going to fit into their role. And the question is going to be, well, what happens when you have to swap out a Jadon Sancho for a Mason Greenwood? What happens when you need to get Mason Greenwood a game, or Marcus Rashford a game, or somebody else a game? And where do they fit in the system if it's not a complete like for sub? And that's where he's going to need to be strong. Paul Pogba has 7 assists this season. Ollie might come to a point where he goes, Pogba works better when he's playing with these players, and Ronaldo works better when he's playing with these players, and we've got Crystal Palace on Saturday, so I'm going to play Pogba and Cavani and Rashford, and Ronaldo's going to rest. But, like, because I could do that, it's a one-off game, and those guys are more than strong enough to do that. But when the big game comes, you got a knockout round game, and it's like, I need my best team, like someone, whether it's Pogba or Bruno Fernandes or Jadon Sancho, might not be in that team because it's not the best team. And there might be a worse player than that person playing in the same position, in the position that you go, well, he plays that position, why isn't he just there? Because they're asked to do different things, and will he be strong enough to do that? I think is a valid question, because we have seen this before. Solskjaer is a cross between, he's a big proponent of the data and the analytics. He has expanded United's data analysis department. He likes having the data. He uses it. But he's also a striker with that old school striker mentality. And a lot of his mentality is, yeah, like, Mason Greenwood's not really doing anything to help create chances, and it's hurting the team against West Ham. But you just give Mason Greenwood, if he just gets that one chance, he'll finish it. And Ronaldo's not doing all the other things, but oh, you put the ball in the box and Ronaldo gets on the end of it. All he needs is one chance. And we saw that last year, like, especially in the Europa League final, like, Marcus Rashford should have been pulled off after 60 minutes. He was terrible. He was hurt and he was and everything. And he played the whole way because Solskjaer's just got that. Well, Rashford's got that moment of quality in him. You give him the ball and all it takes is 7 seconds and he does something to win the game. And it's partially like, I'm not going to, Rashford's his guy and he's got a great relationship with him and he doesn't, and he has trust in him. And it's just part of that striker mentality of, I get it. We're not creating chances, but they just need one. So how strong is he going to be? I think is a very fair question that's going to really shape the season.
Yeah, and to kind of bring it all into context too, I feel like this is a situation, though, that we've been pining to be in for several years now of, oh, man, how do we get all these players in the lineup? Because it used to be, I mean, as late as 4 months ago, we always knew the 11. Like, you could write it in permanent marker. Maybe there's one change here or there because McTominay's got a head injury or something. Or I mean, it was – you could predict it. And now all of a sudden we're unpredictable, which is a nice tactical flavor for other teams trying to figure out what we're going to do. But to bring up Pauly's point, to bring up recent news that I've been reading, Marcus Rashford is ahead of schedule on his rehab. Paul Pogba's been playing outrageously good in the same position that Marcus Rashford plays, but they play two different roles from that position. How are you going to fit them on the field? And so this is one of those come to Jesus moments for Solskjaer where it's like, all right, this is another reason why you've put yourself in the situation where you're, you know, now you definitely need to put it all together and start winning some trophies, because if you've got Paul Pogba and Marcus Rashford and Cristiano Ronaldo and Jadon Sancho, Mason Greenwood, Edinson Cavani, and you got all these guys and you can't manage them, you can't keep them all happy, and you can't get them all on the field producing, that's when, you know, the board starts going and looking for somebody else. Because at the end of the day, it's a lot easier to change a manager than the players. I was glad that we kind of got away from that mentality for a little bit, but now because of the players that we've brought in, it's put us back in that situation that we could.
Or just because they lost the young boys. Yeah. I mean, everybody was calling for his head last week because they lost to young boys. Like, relax.
So, it's funny, and I think if we weren't so unbalanced in the midfield, I think we'd probably be in a better spot, at least as far as trying to figure out how we're feeling as far as who's going to play where in what situations. Because if you knew that you were going to get more consistency in your performances, regardless of who was on the field, I think it would be a lot less of a question mark then of who's going to be unhappy and are people going to be calling for Solskjaer's job after every bad result, simply because at the very least, there's more consistency. It's a little less unpredictable, which is something that I think we'd all like to see. We've all been, you know, asking for as well. So it's just a matter of putting it all together. And, you know, five games isn't necessarily the right sample size. But, and this goes back to our original conversation, if you start to see cracks in the foundation, maybe we should address those instead of just going like, are you not even a Manchester United fan? Like, we just won. Why are you talking about this? And it's like, well, you know, right now bumps in the roads become bigger and bigger problems later on in the rest of the season, because while we're talking about how Manchester United looks semi-unconvincing against West Ham United, and if you think that the last 10 minutes of that game were anything other than comical, then I don't think you have a particularly good sense of humor. If you watch the game that happened right after that, Chelsea's a real team. So if we falter in any way, it's a City-Chelsea race. I mean, it's the Premier League has been a two-horse race for a couple years now, consistently.
To be fair, though, like all the things that say like our numbers are unsustainable, like our numbers are a little bit better than Chelsea's. Chelsea are overperforming more than us.
Yeah, and Liverpool too. Like
Liverpool,
also,
no,
also
Liverpool's numbers
really good.
Liverpool's numbers are that good, but. Yeah. Like, they're already it's already very obvious. Who's the kid that got hurt? Harvey Elliott?
Yeah, right. Harvey Elliott.
Yeah, it's already very obvious that, like, they're missing Harvey Elliott. And it's a paper thin squad.
Yeah, we saw last year what happens when just a couple key figures go down.
Yeah, like, United have an issue where they don't have like-for-like changes in a lot of areas, but it's still a deeper squad. If they had to make do, like, they can, especially because you do have someone like Paul Pogba who could play in multiple positions, even though it's not ideal. But McTominay got hurt. You know, he plays next to Fred, plays next to Matic in a deeper role. You have Mason Greenwood who could play out on the right wing or as a striker. So they do have a bit of a deeper squad than Liverpool.
I think a big difference, though, with Liverpool and to an extent Chelsea after last season, and definitely with City, is the pedigree of these sides and how, you know, I don't want to say football heritage exactly, but like there is something to it of we've been in big games and fallen short the last two seasons. And it is to the point now where if we don't start fixing that side of our seasons, it is going to feel like it's not going to get better eventually.
No argument here.
I spaced out. I'm sorry.
That's cool. I think we saw at the end of last year too. Like, I mean, Tuchel's proven that he's a good manager, and I don't think that there's any reason to think that Chelsea's not going to be in it. Not going to be in it.
Tuchel though gets in. He finds the thing about Tuchel is he finds things to argue about with the board and like weasel a way out, and he's already kind of started.
Yeah,
like,
but
if you listen to the Football Ramble, they like a couple weeks ago they were like, this is Tuchel like planting the seeds for later in the season to like drum up some dissent. So it's like he has a way out if things aren't going well.
Wanted instead of selling.
Yeah,
he comes from the Antonio Conte School of Management.
He's a very good manager, but there's a reason why he's like at Dortmund only lasted 2 years, and PSG like he doesn't stay places very long, and it's like we're happy to see you go.
Yeah. Well. He is a reigning holder of a Champions League trophy. So I think at the very least, throughout the rest of this year, I think Chelsea's got a real good shot of pushing City. So it's just I think as it relates to Manchester United, it is appropriate to point out when we see some flaws and we address them and we hope they get fixed. That doesn't make us less of Manchester United fans, because I think at the end of the day, the reason why we're pointing them out is because we'd like to see them fixed. So that way Manchester United succeeds. But, you know, this is a situation that we've been waiting to be in ever since we started doing this podcast. You know, United looks like a good team. It's now time for Solskjaer to take the next step as a manager. And if he does, then it's going to be great. If he doesn't, then, you know, we're looking at another manager.
Oh.
and don't freak out on Wednesday when you watch the League Cup match against West Ham and it's boring and terrible, because we know the players that are playing in that match are not good and not good at running the attack. Like Donny van de Beek and Nemanja Matic are probably going to start in midfield, and like we've seen that before. They don't move the ball. They don't push the ball forward well, and it becomes a drudge, and it holds you back from winning. And it won't be a surprise if they win ugly. I'd be more shocked about them like winning 3-0 than winning ugly.
I'm just really sad I won't get to see Brandon Williams and Dan James paired up on the left wing together.
Dan James.
I'm not sad about that at all. I'm a little sad that Alex Telles might come back into the team.
Hey, Will.
Well, Phil Jones is in the squad, which I'm kind of excited to see me some Phil Jones.
Let's go. The last time I saw Phil Jones play football, I scored a goal against Tranmere. So
that is the last time Phil Jones played first team football.
I think it
was the Tranmere game.
Seeing Phil Jones than you do of seeing Eric Bailly.
Yeah,
let's go.
But yeah, I guess just to close things out, I mean, the reason that we're even here doing a podcast talking about it is because this club and watching this team means a lot to us individually. Like it does for a lot of people, you know, whether they're paid to do it or not. Manchester United is a big deal because they're important to a lot of people and to communities. And just take better care of each other, you know? Like, the football's going to keep happening. It's not going to stop, you know? Trying to kill each other over really mundane shit is not it.
Yeah, I mean, going on the internet is fun after United win games. And I was, like, excited to see what was buzzing on Monday morning. And it became not exciting very quickly.
Yeah.
Lastly, though, I think we should address the last 10 minutes of the West Ham game, which was funnier than Dodgeball. And that's a movie that's been on TV a lot recently here in the States. Jesse Lingard scored against his former club, and people were clearly egging him on to celebrate. And he was like, I don't know if I should do this or not. Right. I don't know where I stand. But also, like, West Ham, why didn't you come get me? And then...
Well, he turned them down.
And fucking, then David Moyes sent on Mark Noble.
They were like a basketball coach.
Can we talk
going
about
down to his bench and going, yo, we have a technical, we got free throws, check in and take
Nathan's them. Nathan's pinch hitter analogy was perfect.
Like, that's you guys rubbing off on me. Like, how excited were you when you saw me tweet out pinch hitter for Mark Noble taking a pen? But
I mean, I was much more excited to see David De Gea save one for the first time since the Louis van Gaal era.
I was more confident in De Gea saving it because they sent on Noble, not because I thought De Gea. I was like, I don't trust De Gea to save this at all. But I was like, but the narrative. I trust the narrative way more than I trust De Gea.
After this summer in England, bringing guys on cold to come take penalties, like
it was like angels in the outfield. Yeah. Angels in the outfield where Angel came in and like just held De Gea at the right moment and got his hand up there.
Also, though, that was a shit penalty from Mike. if we're counting at a buck and a half, that was terrible.
But De Gea still fucking saved it.
But De Gea saved it because,
do you guys remember the last penalty that De Gea saved?
It was in 2016, so no, I don't. And the last
it was one the was FA Cup semifinal against Everton.
I was going to say, because the last one he saved in the league was, I believe, Leighton Baines.
Yeah, no, the last one, like, in general that he saved was the 2016 FA Cup semifinal against Everton, against Lukaku, who has played for four different clubs since then, including Manchester United. And we've also had, what, like, two U.S. presidents since then?
Bro, that was in my first year of grad school.
Three UK prime ministers.
Someone said, it was, like, the last time he hasn't saved one in 5 years, not including penalty shootouts. And I was like, I don't really think he saved any in penalty shootouts either. So I was like, maybe we don't need that caveat.
Yeah, maybe we don't need to throw that extra stat.
Do you remember the beginning of his career? He saved like a bunch. He saved the Van Persie one.
Yeah.
8-2 game. He saved the Leighton Baines one. He saved another one in like the Moyes or Van Gaal early tenure.
It might have been a cup one.
Since David De Gea last saved one, I finished grad school, worked for one professional football team, started working for a second one, and then got two different promotions at that professional football team. So it's just like
it's been a minute.
I've had a lot of life happen since David De Gea last did that. God, incredible stuff.
Yeah. Dave still saves.
He does, and I'm glad I got to make an Eternal Sunshine reference with it. So.
Yeah. And I think that's a pretty good note to end the podcast on, I guess, since we're going for the positivity train.
That's a positive movie.
Lingard's still Millie rocking in London. And, even if he's not showing it physically. And De Gea saving a penalty.
Hey, if you've made it this far in the podcast, tweet at the Busby Babe and tell me whether or not you like the Along Came Polly meme I made.
Yes, do that. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Auf Wiedersehen.